One of my favorite things about working at Plugged In is that occasionally, every so often, I'm surprised. And honestly, sometimes I'm surprised in a bad way. Maybe usually. But the times that I get surprised in a positive way, that's really one of the joys of this job. And that's the case with the new Disney movie, Encanto. Hey everyone, Adam Holtz here, your host of The Plugged In Show, focus on the family's weekly conversation about entertainment, pop culture, and technology. Thanks for joining us today. Well, you know, Disney usually has something for families for the long Thanksgiving holiday. You know, when you're Black Friday'd out and you don't want to shop anymore and you've eaten as much as you can possibly eat and you just want to go sit in a theater. And I know a lot of families have that kind of tradition. Mm-hmm. Well, this year, the movie Encanto packs an enormous amount of stuff into a delightful animated movie. And even those of us who might be tempted with all that tryptophan in our system to fall asleep in those big comfy seats, well, we're going to stay awake for this one. My compatriot Paul Acey and I both had a chance to see Encanto, and we actually agreed it was one of our favorite movies of the year. And frankly, Paul and I, we don't always see things the same way.
It is true.
So after we spent about half an hour peeling back the layers of this cinematic onion together, we decided this would be a great conversation to have, and we've invited Bob Hoos to join us as well.
So, who knows nothing about the film.
Yes, but I think that that offers a wonderful color commentary
right.
opportunity.
Right.
If Paul and I get too deep in the weeds, you can say, time out, guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
So right. I'll write that down.
Think of yourself as a referee for our little talk.
And, got it.
And in our second segment, Bob and I are going to talk about the new game Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Frankly, I want to know if playing Groot is as much fun as it seems like it would be. You know, wandering around, I'm sure, doing superhero things and saying, I am Groot. And
well, we'll know very soon.
We will know very soon. And of course, we're looking forward to another pulse-pounding segment of our culture countdown. Well, let's dive in. Today, of course, is Thanksgiving, and I want to wish everyone listening a happy Thanksgiving. And I can only imagine that our mellifluous voices are providing the soundtrack to many a family's turkey carving today. Actually, I'm guessing that's not the case. But you might be thinking about movies, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But thinking back on your childhood, do you have any favorite Thanksgiving movies or movie or even just entertainment traditions that you and your family often indulged in?
Well, I'll start us off. I've mentioned it before, actually, because we've talked about holiday movies in the past. But one of my favorite to watch at Thanksgiving is Holiday Inn, which is Bing Crosby.
Uh-huh.
You know, as I said, I won't go into a lot of details because you'd probably be
very bored. It's about a hotel, right? Holiday Inn?
No, actually, it's about a it's about an inn.
Right.
Where he goes off and creates this inn where they only have people come in for the entertainment on holidays. Hmm. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of music. And it covers all the holidays, including Thanksgiving and Christmas and, you know, whatever you can come up with. It's a great film. And it's a great one to gather. I love to gather with my family and watch it.
That's awesome. Paul, what about you?
You know, I would have to go with the old standby.
Star Wars?
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, I was so close.
Because actually, CBS for years and years and years and years and years always televised The Wizard of Oz on Thanksgiving.
That's right.
So I oftentimes when I was a kid, I would sit down and I would watch it all the way through, get creeped out by the flying monkeys, sing along with the Munchkins. Not really. I wasn't much of a singer back then, but it was always kind of fun.
I can see little Paul munchkinning along. That's a pleasant image.
We represent the lollipop kids.
Thank you for
the lollipop kids.
Oh, man. That was the highlight of my week. I mean, I think that says something about the quality of my week, but thank you for that.
Anytime.
So recently, much to my horror, my family has really latched on to Home Alone, the original, as one of their favorite holiday movies. Like, it's sort of, you get into the holiday season starting in Thanksgiving, and it kind of goes all the way through Christmas. So when they get tired of watching Elf, you know, they watch Macaulay Culkin bonk these two criminals on the head with all manner of bonking things. And I didn't really like the film in 1990, and I still don't like it, and I really don't like that my kids love it, because I just feel like there's some sort of, I don't know, it is what it is, but I'm sure that we'll be watching that over our holiday break. And I will also say, having mentioned Home Alone, that there's a new movie out called Home Sweet Home Alone, which is a sequel. And we're not talking about that today, but you'll find it. A review of it at PluggedIn.com if you want to find out if it's better, worse, or merely different than the original. So with that rather odd segue, let's talk about Encanto. Paul, I love when we see a movie, and occasionally both of us or two people on the team will see a movie, and before we write our reviews and edit and post our reviews, we can kind of unpack it and deconstruct it a little bit. We had a long conversation about this one.
We really did.
What is the basic storyline here, for starters? Because this feels like one of those movies that's been a little bit under the radar, and people may not have even heard about it.
Yeah, it has been a little bit under the radar. What it's really about is this family, the Madrigals. They live in this magical house, essentially, and they all have magical abilities. These abilities stem from a tragedy that happened 50 years before.
Because it's a Disney movie, so we got to have a tragedy at the beginning.
Got to have a tragedy at the very beginning. But that tragedy sort of sparked this miracle that allowed the Madrigals and a lot of people around them to have a home, a solid home in the middle of Colombia, war-torn Colombia. Every so often, one of these Madrigal kids goes through this ceremony where they officially get their magical ability. And everyone has gotten one of these fantastic abilities, be it super strength or grace or the ability to heal with food. They have gotten one of these on their magic day, except for Mirabel.
Poor Mirabel.
Poor Mirabel. She has not been able to get a gift. And she tries to make the best of it. But on the next magic day, when the next family member is going to get his gift, she notices...
And this is probably, what, 10 years later?
10 years later, yeah. She's probably in her mid-teens by the time the movie opens. When the next magical child gets his gift, she notices that there are cracks developing in this magic house of theirs, and she sees the candle that has never gone out, this magic candle that's the source of all of this power, nearly goes out. No one else sees anything, or at least admits to seeing anything. So it's up to Mirabel to figure out what is going on and to save the family magic.
And in the midst of that, at least initially, they sort of accuse her of trying to get attention on herself.
Right.
It's like, why can't you just let, you know, this other character have
his
day?
His special day.
You know, do you have to wreck it because you're still mad that you didn't get a magical gift? And I didn't feel like this was quite at the level maybe of Pixar's very best, but it was in the neighborhood, in part because it was an incredibly creative story. And we'll talk about a couple of the mild content caveats that I think we'll need to address. But I didn't know where it was going. Like, I thought, what are they going to do with this story? And there are so many themes here that we could begin to unpack. Do you have one you want to start with to talk about? Because I think this is the kind of movie that you could go see with your family and have an hour-long conversation about afterwards, because there's so much going on here.
Yeah. I would probably first point to the family themes in the movie. We're talking about a very, very tight family in Encanto, where the grandmother, the abuela, has sort of ruled this family kindly and encouraged them to use their gifts for the benefit of the community around them. But as that time has gone on, not only do we see cracks within the actual house, but we see cracks within the family as well. You see that the stress of living up to these expectations can be tiring. And for someone who feels fairly duty-bound himself, I think that that really resonated with me. And I think it could resonate with a lot of people, the idea of the pressures that we are under, the desire to please the people who are really important to us. It makes us less able to show weakness. And that was a huge theme in here.
Now, let me pipe up here.
Yeah.
Since I don't know much about this movie other than seeing the trailer. And as the, okay, I'll play the average Christian listener here.
Yep.
I'm sitting out listening to this. It sounds like a sweet movie, but you've mentioned a number of times about this magic element.
Yep.
And I know I've seen a lot of films that have magic elements in there that turn pretty dark and can get pretty nasty at times, and I might not want to take my kids to see something like that. So tell me, do I have anything to be afraid of in this film?
It depends on your sensitivities, really. I think that you're dealing with definitely some very magical elements, and we know that there was a family member that could see into the future. So we do have some kind of creepy spiritual, quasi-spiritual elements that can feel a little bit like weird spells. But
really one scene in particular.
One scene in particular. But for the most part, it does feel much more like Disney magic, if that makes sense. You know, we're talking Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, that type of magic. You also can look at this movie, I think, where you look at these gifts that these people are given twofold. We can look at it as a metaphor in some ways, how family members have their own strengths that sometimes can set us on edge. We probably all...
Yeah, because we may not have those gifts ourselves, which
exactly.
is definitely the case with Mirabelle.
Mirabelle has a sister who is very gracious and very beautiful, and there's tension there. And you don't need to have a magical gift for, I think, a lot of siblings to look at someone in their family and say, oh, yeah, I feel that way sometimes. So you can look at this as sort of a metaphor. But the other thing that I thought was interesting, Adam, was if you really wanted to pick up something from this that was good spiritual, you can think of these gifts as spiritual gifts in a way because they are being used for the benefit of the community. The family is Christian. You know, we see the church. We see them get married in the church.
There's a priest.
There's a priest. So it sort of has this very, very undertone Christian type of vibe to it. But you do have this sense of gifting in more of a Christian way, in a way.
And so you're saying that parents then could help that idea along, could make that translation, so to speak, for the kids watching.
I think so. I mean, again, you have to take that step. But I think if you want to go in that direction, you can.
And one of the other things that I think would be a terrific thing for families to talk about is how you deal with the reality of disappointment. Mirabelle is crushed that she doesn't receive a gift. And nobody really knows why. And it's not really explained in a detailed way other than the fact that she has an important role to play later in the film. So it kind of circles back around to it. Mirabelle spends much of the film trying to convince herself and everybody that she's okay just the way she is and that she doesn't need a gift to be special. And it's an interesting thing the film does because I think on one level, she really believes that. She has sort of made peace with the fact that for whatever reason, she was not given a magical gift. But then there's one pivotal scene where she sort of lets all of her emotion out and admits, yeah, this is terrible. It's unfair. It's awful. It makes me different. I don't fit in. And so I thought that one of the things the film brought up that was incredibly interesting is how do we deal with disappointment? And do we give our kids space to voice their disappointment? And I have two kids that have no problem voicing their disappointment. I have another child, because she has my people pleaser tendencies, sometimes she doesn't tell the truth because she's trying to please someone else. And as Paul mentioned earlier, I think that's another huge theme in this movie, and it can get to the dysfunctionality of our families, because our desire to serve and please other people can be a good thing, but it can also be a quietly destructive thing. And I think the movie really shows us that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing that I think the movie does really effectively is it shows that we are not, sometimes when we have really great gifts that we want to use and they become sort of our identity, right? You are smart in school, and so that is something that you embrace. You're strong, you're athletic, you're have a great voice. We all have those things that we take pride in, and fairly so, but they can be constricting.
Yes.
And sometimes those gifts can become a trap for us. And one of the messages that the movie hammers home, especially toward the end, is that we are the gifts. The gifts that we have are valuable and worthwhile and all that, but just us alone, we are the gifts. We are the precious thing. And I really, that really was powerful for me.
It really was for me too. And I think it's safe to say, after a number of years / decades doing this job, we can be a little crusty and cynical. And this was a movie that almost surgically cut through my cynicism and crustiness. And there's a real tenderness to it. And again, your question about the magical stuff, that's a legitimate question. And there was that one scene that kind of bothered me. And there are a couple other scenes where she's investigating a mystery. I won't say too much. That
can get pretty
creepy. It gets a little creepy, kind of in an old Scooby-Doo kind of way. Like if you've got kids that were scared to death at Scooby-Doo, there are a couple scenes in this movie that might give them pause, but I got to the end, I'm like, wow, that was not a throwaway animated movie just for the sake of a throwaway animated movie. And that's my cynicism leaking through again there. But as I said earlier, we often talk about using movies as conversation tools. This is a good one. If you feel like you can navigate the spiritual issues that we have talked about, and I would say, it's not heavy.
Right.
This is not a movie about the occult. We're not even in Harry Potter territory. It's just sort of posits magic as a plot point that sort of sets the whole story up. But I think if you do choose to see Encanto, you could talk about some questions afterwards with your kids. And I think especially for kids, maybe 9, 10, 11, 12, that's kind of the sweet spot here for these questions. So think about these questions, and these will be on the episode notes for today's show as well. Which character did you relate to the most and why? Do you ever feel pressure to please others, maybe in our family or at school? And how does that pressure make you feel? What do you think are healthy ways to deal with disappointment, and what are unhealthy ones? How do you think this movie shows us the danger of family secrets? And then, do you think our greatest strengths are the most important thing about who we are? Why or why not? I think those would be some terrific questions to kick around. And Paul, because it's the nature of how we're wired, we could probably go for another hour on this. But I hope that our conversation just about some of the themes that stood out to us has whetted your appetite to, at the very least, check out our full review at PluggedIn.com, and you can learn more about whether this would be an appropriate movie for you and your family to enjoy together this Thanksgiving weekend. Well, in our second segment today, we are going to turn to our resident video game maven, Bob Hoos.
Maven.
I know, right? I'm sure that maven is the word. It's not Mabel. It sounds like Mabel, but it's maven. Somebody who knows a great deal.
Marvel.
Maven. Maven and Marvel. And Bob is going to tell us what we need to know as families about Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. So probably a lot of families have seen some of the movies. They're
right.
Enjoyable and funny and also have some content. And as a parent, that's what I want to know about. So what's going on in this game? And then we'll talk about some of the pros and the cons.
Okay. Well, starting out in terms of Guardians of the Galaxy, if there are people that have no idea what that is or who
yes.
they are.
Good point.
We could talk about that. They're essentially an intergalactic group of misfits
okay.
that were sort of accidentally thrown together to become a family.
Uh-huh.
And they are traveling around, and they do some good things and some not so good things sometimes. And who are they? They're Peter Quill, who is the only human in the group, also known as Star-Lord.
Right.
And then you've got his love interest, a green-skinned assassin named Gamora. Then you've also got Rocket, who is like this genius raccoon-looking character.
And kind of a smart aleck.
Yeah, yeah, who knows a great deal about creating inventions and explosives. And then there's Drax, who is this big muscular guy who's always so serious and stern, and so much so that he becomes funny at times because he has no sense of humor whatsoever.
Right.
And then the last
one. And as somebody who has no sense of humor, I sometimes can appreciate others who have no sense of humor.
Well, we think of you as Drax very often.
That's what I thought.
Especially when you flex. But
exactly.
Anyway,
and
then the last character is Groot, who is this big tree-like person that only says Groot.
I am Groot.
That's it. He just sort of reaffirms his identity every
his
time
Grootness.
He speaks. Yes. Anyway, so this group is together very collectively very funny and quirky, and that's what makes the movies fun,
uh-huh.
You know, because they're really quirky. And in turn, this game is too. In this particular case, they start out doing something a little bit illegal. They break into this little place, but what happens is they set loose this powerful entity, and now it's their job to take care of it.
Okay.
And that it's going to be threatening not only the galaxy, but potentially the entire universe. And while they're doing that, they're also running into this rabid cult, and they have to deal with them too. So that's what's happening.
So there's a great deal at stake in the plot of the game.
There is indeed. It's not just quirky fun.
So I will do what you did in our last segment. I will put on my I don't know very much hat. In terms of genre, is this a shooter? Is it a role-playing game? Is it a little bit of everything?
It's an action-adventure.
Okay.
You know, and you play predominantly as Peter Quill.
Okay.
And so there,
does he get to wear that mask with the glowing eyes?
Sometimes. Cases, yes. So you never get a chance to play as Groot.
Oh,
that the conversations would be limited in terms of your choices.
I am Groot.
Because there's a lot of conversations. I mean, that's a real key element here to the game, is those interactions and those conversations that you have with others.
So there's kind of a little bit of a role-playing element?
Yes, yes. But it's a little different as compared to some games like this.
Okay.
It's not as grinding feeling. See, a lot of times you'll have these things where you can make conversation choices.
Right, and that determines kind of where the plot goes.
But they can be very boring and grinding and blah. Whereas this one is very interesting. And I the one thing I really appreciated about it was how they set up the conversations with people so that it forced you to learn how to listen. I thought it was a very interesting part of the game. Because if you didn't listen, if you just sort of skip ahead like sometimes you'll do in a game like this,
I do when I'm reading Paul's emails.
Yeah, there
He's
you go.
Like, I wrote you about this and you didn't read it.
You'll miss important clues that might help you solve puzzles or figure out what to do next. So it's a really an interesting element of this game that I enjoyed. And another aspect that's a lot of fun is the fact that this is a family of people. And so like a lot of families, you know, there's a lot of squabbling that goes on too within the midst because they're very different personalities. And so the game forces you to think about relationships and about the choices you should make in relationships in terms of how to heal something. If something bad has taken place and somebody's hurt, how to heal that, how to deal with different personality types, how to be a good friend. So along with all the fun, and in general, it is a very fun game, quirky and fun, there are those very positive elements.
So one of the things that we have been concerned about in the movies is we've got some language and we get some suggestive, it's not over the top, but, you know, winks for, you know, slightly off-color jokes for adults. I'm curious what kind of content issues there might be here, because it seems like you really like the game.
I did, but it does come with a caveat. Because there are some content issues. There is some of that sensuality. You know, you've got the whole thing that Peter Quill is this man about the galaxy and he, you know, he has his ways with young women. But
so an interstellar James Bond quite.
But it's not as heavy in the game as it would be in the movies.
Okay.
But it's still there. You still will have some little conversations that lean in that direction or maybe about drinking.
Some more a little bit of innuendo.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I think the biggest problem for me was the non-language. And what I mean by that is that there's not foul language in here. You don't get F-bombs or S-words or anything like that, but you do get substitute nasty language.
Yeah.
And not that it wasn't nasty, but you understood what they were trying to sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink at you.
Yep.
And so when I thought about it in terms of, okay, parents playing with their kids, because a lot of times that's what we talk about. Can a mom and dad get in there and play with the
kids? Yeah, that was one of the things I was wondering about.
And from a certain point, yes, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun experience that isn't grinding. And so I think that would be a real possibility for parents going, I find this to be annoying.
Wow. So it sounds like some great stuff, but definitely enough things here that it's not a slam dunk positive.
Right.
You're going to want to read your full review at PluggedIn.com.
Exactly. And if mom and dad think that they would probably have a problem with those issues, then there you go. There's your answer.
Right. Well, Bob, thank you for playing through the game and for letting us know what we need to know about that as families.
You're welcome.
Well, now it's time for that part of the Plugged In show we like to call
Culture Countdown.
So you have 30 seconds to tell us something that's going on in the pop culture, in the world of technology that you think families need to know about. Bob?
Okay.
I choose you. You ready?
I'm up. I'm ready.
All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
We all know about the popular South Korean Netflix show Squid Game. And we all know about cryptocurrencies.
Right.
Well, a developer decided to take the popularity of Squid Game and create his own Squid Game currency. Yes, indeed. And he sold a lot of it, like over $3 million worth of it, and then he disappeared.
Oh.
It was all a scam.
Oh.
So the lesson is, anything, any kind of... You won't get the lesson.
Right? Right. If you want to know what the lesson is, you're going to need to read the article, which you'll find a link to in our episode notes for today's show. But thank you for mostly warning parents about this possibility.
So was it called Squid Coin?
It was called Squid Game Currency.
Squid
Game Currency. Oh, that's right. I can't say
in
anymore.
The story. No talking.
And I know that
no
Paul
talking.
Is excited to see if he can get his story in 30 seconds. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
All right, let's do it. 3, 2, 1, go.
We have talked about the Eternals on this very podcast. It has not gotten great reviews. Not only did we not like it, but most of reviewers did not either. But there's one development in Eternals that had people buzzing, and that is that it introduced the very first deaf character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. As it turns out, searches for learning sign language went up 250% after the movie came out.
That's incredible. I am going to look forward to learning more about that story when I check out the clip.
Very nice.
From the link in our episode notes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Who wants to do the honors for me?
I'll hold it.
All right. Should be self-explanatory. You want to count me in?
Sure. 3, 2, 1.
My son and I started playing the free game Pokemon Go a little more than 5 years ago. It's not free, people. Newsflash. It's made $5 billion.
Ooh.
Twice as much, 2.5 times as much as Avatar. And it's a reminder, every free game your kid signs up for on his or her phone, there's probably a way they're trying to get money out of you. So just be aware of that. They've gotten a little bit... All right. Friends, you know where to go to find out more about these awesome stories from our Culture Countdown this week. And we will look forward to treating you with still more short stories next week. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us this week at the Plugged In Show. What do you think about our conversation today? Do you have a favorite Thanksgiving movie that you traditionally watch? Do you even go to the movies, or do you have a 90-inch flat screen on your wall in your living room that has pretty much replaced the theater for you at this point? You know, whatever your traditions are, we would love to hear about them. And you can let us know at Facebook or Instagram, or shoot us an email at team@thepluggedinshow.com. And speaking of that, we heard from one of our listeners via Facebook this week, and I think Our producer, Ashley, has that message for us.
Yeah, Adam, this message is from Donovan. We got this from an email he sent in. He says, "Hi, so I recently listened to your episode on the cultural impact of music, and I wanted to say that because of that episode and some spiritual inward questioning, I have edited my music diet to all Christian, with a couple of exceptions. I thought you might also want to know that I am only 15, and I read your reviews, blogs, and listen to your podcast on a regular basis."
Well, thanks so much for connecting with us, Donovan. We love hearing how the podcast is encouraging you to think more deeply about your own musical choices. That's awesome. Well, as our thanks for being a part of the Plugged In Show family, today, for a gift of any amount, we would love to send you a copy of Paul Acey's book, Burning Bush 2.0, How Pop Culture Replaced the Prophet. You'll find a link to order that book in the episode notes for today's show, as well as on the Plugged In blog entry for our conversation. Or, if you prefer, just give us a call at 800-A-FAMILY. Well, thanks again for taking some time to spend with us this week hearing about Encanto and Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. I hope that that has given you some fodder for thinking about your own entertainment choices this Thanksgiving weekend. And we look forward to connecting with you again next week for another episode of The Plugged In Show.